Welcome to the Dream Views podcast. I'm Canis Lucidus.
And I'm Ophelia Blue.
This is the Dream Views question and answer podcast, where we answer your questions about lucid dreaming and just generally about the art of dreaming. The home base of this podcast is dreamviews.com if you want to come check out the forum and the Dream Journal section that we've got there. And most of the questions have come from the forum as well. It's been a long time since we've done an episode, and this is my fault. I started a new business, got busy over the holidays, and just generally haven't had the kind of time to dedicate to it that I want. But it's great, great to be podcasting with you again.
Oh, you too. It's been a while, and I don't have any additional intro material.
Okay, got it.
I just realized I missed that part. I went through this whole thing and I missed that part. All right, we've got three really great questions from the submissions thread. There's one that's talks about REM cycles and how to time your dreams with respect to that. We have another one that to me it's a little more of a philosophical question. It's like how to achieve 100% lucidity, and then our final question, which talks about jumping from scene to scene in dreams and how to reality check that in your day-to-day life and be able to kind of anticipate that in a dream so you can get lucid. That one's a kind of a tough one too, but we have some really great, great ideas for how to attack that one. But our first question, which comes from Golden Spark, and I don't know, is Golden Spark male or female?
I do not know. I could try to research this while you read the question.
The only reason is because Golden Spark was referred to as she recently, and I thought that was a guy. But anyway, so I'm so sorry. But the question is, hey guys, just listening to your natural wake back to bed session. Great session, by the way. Thank you very much. I tend to wake after every REM episode, but something I have found is that if I wake after REM, which is at the end of a sleep cycle, so the next episode is at least an hour away. Now, I recently did a wake back to bed wild, but spent nearly 2 hours trying to wild. That is a long time. Uh-huh. Is that maybe a reason that natural wake back to bed is difficult, particularly during the night rather than later in the morning?
And Golden Spark is, in fact, a dude.
A dude. That's what I thought. Okay. Sorry, dude. No, I was right, though. I had a feeling.
Yes.
Dude,
so. Yes.
I will make sure that other member is corrected. But anyway, when it comes to REM cycles and sleep patterns and sort of the science behind all that stuff, I've always been kind of a wing it person. I never really paid a lot of attention to it because I'm not, by no means am I like a massive super natural lucid dreamer. I just didn't really try to meticulously time it. With cycles, my sleep schedules are kind of crazy anyway. I kind of just timed it based on certain landmarks, certain feelings, things like that. Mm-hmm. I have been thinking about it a lot more lately, especially after getting, seeing your question. I wanted to read something that our other administrator, Gab, had said, because I kind of threw this question at her. And she said, well, first of all, a REM cycle is not always an hour away. I'm actually kind of pretty much quoting her here. For example, she lists is, especially in a nap, it's usually just minutes away or minutes apart because non-REM cycles consist of falling asleep and deep sleep is usually completely skipped. So you just kind of go, you bounce back and forth fairly quickly. Now, sleep cycle starts usually about 90 minutes non-REM and ends with about 10 minutes of REM sleep. Okay. But as we sleep, the non-REM gets shorter and the REM gets a little bit longer until after about 8 hours of sleep, they almost start to switch length. So the longer we sleep, the shorter we wait for the REM cycle. And when she read the part where you said that you had to wait nearly 2 hours to try to wild, it almost looks like a failure to really kind of fall back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not saying you're an insomniac or anything, but maybe you were focusing too much on, keeping your mind aware that it was harder for you to fall back to sleep and get to that REM cycle. Not that there's so long of a time between the cycles. Another possibility too is that you didn't sleep long enough. I've seen a lot of people talk about when they want to do the wake back to bed, they go to bed at midnight and they wake up at 5. And to me, that seems like a really short time. I need a lot more time. Like if I go to bed at midnight, I usually wake back to bed around 7, and I may go back to sleep and wake up again and go back to sleep again and have a while at, you know, around 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And I know that's kind of long, and I am a habitually long sleeper, I admit. But
yeah, that sounds very luxurious. I would love to be able to put that together. Because I mean, it's a good period of time, you know, because you've basically gotten all that sleep up front, right? And then you've taken a super long wake back to bed, and so, you know, chances are you have some REM time built up and ready to go, like when you go back to sleep.
Exactly. So I would say either. There's a possibility that it's just not enough sleep prior, and you are kind of closer to those REM cycles that are further apart. Even then, though, 2 hours is really long. The other possibility is that it was too much sleep, and you're just that much closer to, you know, time to wake up. You know, you're not gonna, you know, enter another REM cycle. But something else I wanted to mention real quick. I'm kind of scrolling up and down here. There's something called delta sleep, which is a form of non-REM. You know, non-REM is kind of nebulous. It's like when you're not in rapid eye movement. And Sagius has a great thread about it. And I'm going to make sure that any links that I mention, we get.
Oh, yeah. This is deep stuff. This is really, really deep stuff.
I'm not going to get into it so much, but the point I wanted to make is you can dream in non-REM cycles. And, you know, delta sleep is one of the possible ones. And if as long as you can get to sleep, there are more opportunities to get lucid. Delta sleep and other non-REM cycles might be shorter or briefer. I've heard people say that, you know, they're not as long, they're not as emotionally involved. They're kind of what would be dream fragments, you know, happen there. Yeah, I haven't experimented that much with it, but the point I'm trying to make is as long as you can get back to sleep, you do have another chance for having a lucid dream. And maybe just the long 2 hour period was not necessary to Wild, that it just, you know, may have been that you're, you know, too awake, had too much sleep, too little sleep. That was something I think would be definitely worth experimenting on, trying to isolate the, you know, the time that's best for you to find that sweet spot where you are tired enough to go back to sleep, but can still maintain awareness to Wild or any other induction method.
That's right. Well, because I mean, with Wild, you've got to be aware, right, during the transition to sleep. But even more importantly, you have to actually get back to sleep. You know, and it's kind of easy to forget that part because, you know, you don't think of that as being hard, but it really can be when you're focusing like too much on, you know, on awareness, and it turns into wakefulness, right? That's really the problem. It's like, that's what's challenging about Wild is having that gentle little seed of awareness, not enough to keep you awake, but enough to carry you through and, you know, keep your mind active as the dream begins. I mean, it's a real trick, but yeah, it's if you move too far in a particular direction that keeps you up, that's another good way to, you know, to have Wild, you know, go wrong, basically. And yeah, it's a trouble a lot of people have.
Yeah. It's definitely a sweet spot. You know, it's absolutely dependent upon sleep. So I would say anything, if you're having this issue where you're up for those 2 hours, maybe focus less on the Wild technique itself and just find ways to lull yourself back to sleep. And then from there, add on layers of awareness.
Yeah. Well, you know, which you find that like Mild is a decent backup for Wild too, right? Because I mean, if the things that you're doing to focus yourself during Wild, like honestly, half, I would say maybe 75% of the time when I'm trying to Wild, I end up just falling asleep, you know, and it'll end up being a dialed anyway, because I'm thinking about lucid dreaming so much that whole time kept it on my mind. And so like once I started dreaming, I ended up having some dream about lucid dreaming, or oftentimes it'll be a false awakening where I'm all pissed off that I didn't have a lucid dream. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, from talking to the dream characters, it'll become clear that, okay, yeah, this is actually, you know, I'm actually dreaming right now, you know, and it's, and keeping it on your mind, it can be a good seed for dialed too. So there's nothing wrong with just, you know, falling asleep. If it doesn't work, you know, it's better to relax enough to fall asleep than I think just, you know, give yourself insomnia. That's how I view it.
Yeah. Oh, I agree completely. You got any other, Any other advice there for Golden
Spark? A lot of it falls in the same line as yours, but yeah, like you mentioned, to really consider the timing, you know, and that the REM periods are just way, way closer together in the as it becomes the morning, you know, and as you get later and later in the morning, they get longer, they get closer. And so if you can wake back to bed a little bit later, if your schedule allows for that, then perfect. Or go to bed earlier. You know, I mean, if there's a certain time where your alarm's going to go off and you've got to go to work, going to bed early one night is a great way to just give yourself plenty of time so that you can really get a good 6 or 7 or whatever it is number of hours that you want to have before, before you wake back to bed. It's again, personal experimentation really, really helps. But then, like you mentioned, the trouble really was with falling back asleep, you know, because obviously you maintained your awareness fine, you know, but then the question is doing that while still getting back to sleep. And so I would just suggest trying something that really, really lets you, keep your mind somewhat engaged, but lets you fall asleep. I've got a few that I try. I'm not the world's best wilder. I tend to do a lot of failed wilds that turn into dialeds, which I'm perfectly happy with. Is whatever gets me lucid, you know, yeah. I'm cool with, but, like one thing I like to do is backward counting. Start with 100 or 99, and have a mantra that you go through as you're doing it. So it'd be 99. I'm dreaming. 98. I'm dreaming. You know, this is of course verbal. I mean, I'm not verbal in your head as you're doing it. You know, and just gently. And if you lose count, don't worry about it. Just go back to 99 and just really just relax and don't have any expectations about what's going to happen. Don't worry about anything. Don't worry about if you're going to fall asleep. Just relax and let the experience carry you wherever it does. And that will generally get you back to sleep. And then if you can couple that or just do on its own, some kind of visualizing a scene, that can also be a way to, you know, just find yourself emerging into a scene. But basically something that lets you just really get back to sleep and, whatever you didn't really say too much about how you were trying to wild, but just something, maybe throw in a little more relaxation and see if that works for you. Another thought that I had is that you mentioned that you have a lot of these natural wakings. Let's see. I tend to wake after every REM episode. And if that's true, you really would do well to probably try a de-isled occasionally.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you know? I find that if I wake up from a dream, it's not necessarily done. You know, you could have more, you know, gas in the tank as far as dreaming goes. Just kind of just hold on to that awareness. Just focus on the scene. Try to relax enough to just slip back into sleep, slip back into the dream. Another favorite for de-isling is just do some kind of, you know, mentally, of course, with your dream body, some kind of repetitive motion. Like I used to, you know, Xanos and I had this thing where we would try swinging a Roman sword around, you know, for the gladiator task.
I remember
and
that.
You remember this? Yeah. So nerdy. I mean, we're just little boys, you know, to the end, you know, but yeah, it just had this thing where I was like, all right, I've woken up from a dream. Or I feel like I'm close to dreaming, and so I'm going to just imagine myself over and over swinging a sword. Or you know, Xanos did this thing where he would ride a bike. You know, just stuff like that causes your dream body to have to produce some sense of motion. And if a dream's going to form, it'll often form around that. And, you know, anyway, I mean, if you're waking up from a dream a lot, I mean, you can go for it, you know. And I would really give it a try. De-isled's a great technique. If I had more natural wakings, I have to induce my natural wakings by drinking pee water these days, you know, but if you're just doing it naturally all the time, it could be a great way to go. So yeah, that was pretty much it for what I had. I guess the main points are just to really think about the timing, consider moving it a little later, try to get the, try to get those longer periods of REM that are later, and maybe try one of the, you know, Ophelia and Gab style gigantic wake back to beds that, you know, maybe go for an hour and a half or 2 hours where you just do other stuff and then go back to sleep. If your schedule allows it, and, you know, make sure you can get to sleep, you know, really, I guess, focus on that. What else did we cover that I'm not thinking of?
Just personal experimentation with your sleep times and just find some way to relax and get yourself back to sleep. You know, make sure there's nothing nothing left over from the day that's stressing you out that you're thinking of, or you know, or and take into consideration if there's any medications you're on or anything that that's going on in your life that's preventing you literally from getting back to sleep, or that's causing you to wake up when you should. I mean, you said it's natural wake back, or that you're waking up after every REM cycle naturally, but you know, is there something that you can do to get a better night's sleep, or to get to sleep quicker in between the REM cycles,
which great I said
100 times.
that's a great point.
Yeah, look at what you're doing in the day. Is there anything that you could change or adjust to help you sleep more effectively? Can't lucid dream if you're not sleeping.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's a very good point you made too about, hey, you need to have like a quiet mind if you're going to fall asleep. It's really, really hard to fall asleep if you're just, your head's buzzing with thoughts. And it can be hard to let that stuff go, you know, especially when it sneaks up on you, you wake up thinking about it. I mean, I get caught by this and it's hard to get back to sleep, but the more you can quiet your mind and just not let those things intrude on your sleep time and your dream time, I think the better off you are generally.
Yes.
So let's see, we can move on to the next question from Fogelbeast. And this is about, I call this 100%. is basically, hey, how do, you know, what is it that people that are able to lucid dream all the time, you know, what is sort of philosophically going on there, and how would someone get to that point? So here's Fogelbeast. He says, Ophelia Blue touched on this in the last podcast, that there are a set of things she knows to have in place when she wants to LD. Do you have any theories on what is needed to have a lucid dream any night that you want one? There are members on here that seem to have the ability, and lately when I try on the weekends, I seem to usually be able to LD, but not 100% yet. Positive thinking. The recipe needed is probably different for everyone, but there are likely common threads or general themes. More directly, what are some of the barriers we need to overcome to achieve this? Perhaps overconfidence, or more specifically, getting too lax on the fundamentals due to overconfidence. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Or mental barriers in general. I can't because something they read. We all have stories here, I'm sure. Agreed. 100% is hard to imagine, so perhaps it could be addressed as theories to get as close to 100% as possible. Yes, this is a great question, and I have to, you know, full disclosure, I am far, far from being a 100%er, especially lately. So, and I can tell you all about how you let your skills slip. I can tell you all about how to do that.
But here's what not to do.
Exactly.
By Candace Lucidus.
Exactly. Because I noticed, you know, especially one point that he made about, you know, perhaps getting too lax on the fundamentals due to overconfidence. And this is a great point because, like, one thing that I think a lot of people have probably gone through, and I sort of recently went through it, is that when you first start slacking, you still have lucid dreams generally, you know, you'll still have them. And you start thinking, wow, okay, this is just what I do now, you know, and I'm just not going to worry about that stuff. I'm so busy with all these other things. And then it's just really easy to let other things sort of take over that time, at least for me. And that is something. And then, but then what happens is after a while, it just drops off, and then you're like rebuilding it all, you know? And that was something I ran into. And I think it all relates back to forming a habit, you know, basically convincing yourself, first of all, that this is something you do, and then doing it a lot, you know, making it something that you practice. And so, honestly, that comes from having lucid dreams, right? So you have lucid dreams via whatever mechanism. It's your perspective memory, your intent. All these things are trainable skills. And so the more you practice them successfully, you know, the better off that you're going to be. Fogelbeast, in this post, he pointed to Catarly's. This is like the best name on the forum, by the way. he pointed to Catarly's ideas about about there being sort of a lucidity circuit in the brain improving with practice. So basically there's like this, you know, this part of your brain that's responsible for becoming lucid. And that's actually, you know, very true. It may not just be one part, you know, but it's those skills that you use when you're becoming lucid, getting better with practice. And it's absolutely true. I mean, when you practice something frequently, I mean, the brain assigns extra neurons to tasks that we repeat regularly. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you do these things a lot, it's like, you know, it's there's a lot of reasons why when you practice a skill and practice it well, you get better at it. And eventually you can't even believe you ever had to think to do it. You know, it's just something that you do, but just via repetition, doing it right over and over and over again. So good practice really improves those skills. There's some interesting sort of neuroscience behind that, but basically, you know, neurons are connected by axons, and axons have a myelin sheath. It's just like this fatty fatty sheath, and what that does is the more of that myelin that's along those axons, the faster and stronger the nerve impulse travels. All right, and so what that means is that as you exercise a particular pathway between neurons, your brain produces more and more myelin along that pathway, and the signals travel much easier, faster, stronger. And so that's why when you do something over and over again, you get better at it. It becomes more natural, becomes easier to do, you know,
wow.
Which is also why you don't want to do self-destructive stuff, you know, like it's why it's good to break bad habits.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a lucidity habit that you're building up, that's great. You know, I mean, you will get better at it just by doing it a lot and not letting it slip. You know, that was a mistake I made, right? I let it slip. And then, you know, for a while, just kind of rode on, you know, my past practice. But it is a user to lose it kind of thing. At least for me, it was, you know, it's just a set of skills, like the, you know, just improving your perspective memory, being observant, living in the moment, and learning what the dream world really feels like. I think sages would call it just paying attention. He has a book I have not read, what I plan to, called Simply Pay Attention. Right? And that's just, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense if you're doing that all the time, if you're always just really paying attention to who you are, what you are, where you are, and keeping those questions in mind, you know, you can't help but become lucid, right? Because if you ever ask yourself that question in a dream, like, hey, how'd I get here? Who am I? Does this make sense? You cannot pass that question, you know, like it's a reality check you just can't beat, you know? Fogelbys had a quote in the post too, that I actually thought illustrated this really, really well. This is Fogelbys saying, lucid dreaming is transforming the way I look at so many things in positive ways. I came home from the movies and the sun had just set, and the way the light was hitting the trees and the houses and the bright star planet already visible above the tree line of tall soaring trees was just very magical and dreamlike. And it is about, in my opinion, I think that really sums up what waking life is like for someone who's got the mindset of being aware and just really paying attention and understanding what they're seeing, you know, what it means about the nature of reality and, you know, where they are. Are they dreaming? Are they awake? You know, what are the things they're experiencing? And I think that's a very, very, very important part of it. Another factor that I think is really important for these 100%ers, from what I've observed, is this comes from just, you know, observing like a lot of what Cevasan does. He's another, and this is a guy who has so many lucids. He was doing an experiment trying to bring back his non-lucid dreams because he was tired of not having non-lucids anymore.
Oh my.
I mean, my God, you know, this has not
you
been an issue
thing.
For me. Yeah, I know, exactly. He missed them, so he brought them back. He had to actually work on this.
But
you know, he does a lot of dream yoga, and I think that one of the important teachings in dream yoga is just that they really tell you not to get caught up in the emotional storms of life, right? And that a lot of what you experience emotionally, in particular, these are things that you really just create inside yourself. They're experiences that are totally internally created, and so they're really just dreams in themselves. Right. And if you see, like whenever emotion gathers up, you understand it to be a dream and you really scrutinize it, because dreams are really emotionally driven, you know, and it's, I think a lot of it is all that emotion just pushes aside all the habits that you would normally have of like observing and thinking, hey, is this a dream? But you're caught up in some emotional situation. And if learning to sort of coast above that, you know, sort of be a little bit above, you know, getting caught up in a lot of emotional storms, allows you to just more easily bring in the logical mind. And I think that's another habit that really, you know, really pays off well in this whole thing.
Cevasan had to train himself to go back to being overly emotional so he could,
I don't know exactly how he did it. Like I should check. I, I, I didn't read into detail his method for increasing his non-lucidity, because it was the last thing I needed to be practicing, you know, in the world. But yeah, I mean, he basically, you know, he was determined to be, you know, a little bit less lucid. I think part of it was that he was finding, like you mentioned, some of the stuff that occurs in non-REM sleep and maybe in Delta to be a little bit annoying to be lucid during that time. I think he was just kind of wanted to rest, you know?
Makes sense.
You know, and so I could see that. Again, this is not a problem I've ever had at all,
me
you know?
Neither.
But to me, that really says something, that is a big part of it. And he is a big practitioner of dream yoga, teaches the class and Dream Views for dream yoga. And a lot of what they do is they cut through that emotion and understanding, you know, how much of the world as you experience it is purely just created in your mind. You know, yeah. A lot of what you feel and all that's just, it's internal. You know, there's one more, I found this, there's this great, Robert Louis Stevenson quote that I think really illustrates the kind of the mindset that works. This is Robert Louis Stevenson's, quiet minds cannot be perplexed or frightened, but go on in fortune or misfortune at their own private pace, like a clock during a thunderstorm. And I think that's just exactly right. You know, it's like this idea that regardless of what the, you know, the dream is trying to convince you of, the lucid mind is, understands that it's just purely, you know, it's a lot of noise going on outside, but you can still, you know, bring in that logic that you need to see it for what it is and become lucid. And I think that's a great quote. Anyway, yeah. All that being said, I'm no 100%er. So these are just the things that I think. a lot of theory there, let me tell you. that's pretty much all I've got. All right, tell me, how do we get to 100% lucidity? Lay it on me.
All right. Well, one of the things you said was one of the things I was going to say. Lucid dreaming is like, it's like a sport or an art form. Practice makes perfect. Even if mm-hmm. you never really achieve perfection, it's one of those things you always strive for.
Yeah.
Which may not be the answer you're looking for, you know, because it's, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, the more you practice, the more those neural pathways get just like almost literally like grooves in your brain, you know, mm-hmm. you get there quicker, you know, just as if you're trying to learn to play the piano or be a better, you know, Olympic runner or something like that. And that's just something that you're just going to have to, you know, figure out on your own as you go. And I had no idea Cerveson was so good at lucidity that he's actually trying to stop. So he'd be, I wish I'd taught, you know, I'd asked him a couple questions about it. But, and it's something you actually, you mentioned in the last, one of your answers in the last question, where you're talking about having kind of like a backup plan for, whether voluntarily mm-hmm. or not, you know, having a backup method ready to go if the first one doesn't work.
Sure.
Perfect timing. Not like 3 days ago, Burke, who he actually was a guest on a podcast last year that Rick and I did about dials, because he's really great. He's great at all methods, but
sure.
he was on the dialed episode. He wrote a tutorial, and we'll make sure to include that link as well. It's called, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, it's called the Multiple Induction Technique. It's just in the induction technique section. This is really cool. What he's done, and it's nothing new. It's not like, you know, the SRIIAQUIII, you know, method.
ILD, right.
Yeah, exactly. it really is just kind of an overview of all, you know, not all of the methods. You know, God, that would be an ungodly number. But all the, you know, the main ones, you know, like the awareness technique, dialed, mild, wake back to bed, wild, and de-aisled. Mm-hmm. But the way he approaches it is how to, not necessarily you know, combine them all in one night, but just kind of have them in that order in your mind. Because if you try the first one and it doesn't quite give you the result you wanted, there's no reason why you can't do the next one in the same night. And then if that one fails, there's the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one.
Yeah, definitely.
Basically, it's like having a, you know, your little bag of tricks. And this is something that may be a little bit easier for someone who has been working on these different techniques for a long time. So you know kind of what, you know what to look for when you want a de-aisled, or when you want to, you have your mantra ready for a mild, mm-hmm. or, you know, you practice sporadic awareness, or wake back to bed, and there, you know, there's certain mm-hmm. things that work and certain things that don't. But the point is, you seriously increase your chances of having a lucid dream at night if you know all these techniques, you know kind of how they work, not just how they work in general from other people's experiences, but how they work for you. And this is something that I sort of involuntarily have done over the years on DreamViews. I like Burke, and by the way, thank you again, Burke, for writing this, because this is great. This worked out perfect timing. My first lucid dream was just like a random dialed. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, what is this? You know, I'm in a tornado with my brother. It's a dream, you know, and I woke up right away. And then I basically only dialed it. I had no idea what people were talking about. Wild vibrations, mm-hmm. sleep paralysis. What's this nonsense? I don't know what that is. I don't do that. And, you know, a little bit of awareness, you know, maybe mentally preparing myself the day before. Not so much a mild per se, but just saying, you know, hey, I'd kind of like to lucid dream tonight. I haven't done that in a while. And, you know, 4 out of 5 times it might work. But, you know, I guess, gosh, after about maybe 5 years of being on DreamViews, then I started having de-aisleds. You know, I would wake up and I'd go back to sleep and immediately be in a
perfect
a quick little. This is before I really figured out how to wild, but I'm still kind of fuzzy between the two of them, because de-aisled is like a bunch of little mini wilds, but
yeah, it really is. I think of it as wild, like on easy mode. Basically, yeah. you're right in the middle of a dream and you just slip right back in. You don't bother waking up, and if there's a dream, it's just about to form again, and you dive right back. It's really just the quickest path to a wild, you know. It's a good gateway drug to the full deal, I guess, where you know, like laying down and like waiting for the dream to start, you know. Yeah, de-aisled's a great technique.
That makes sense, and yeah, because then the true wilds that I've had, yeah, I literally woke up, piddled around a bit, and went back to bed, and kind of gradually felt these vibrations coming, and they transitioned me into a lucid dream that mm-hmm. lasted a good long while, and that actually happened much later after I figured out how to de-aisled. And the cool thing is, I would, you know, if I go to bed and I set myself up with awareness all day long, and I, you know, have my mantras and something that he didn't include in his multiple induction technique, which is not really an induction technique. It's
multiple
more like,
induction technique, the MIT.
Yeah, the MIT.
Nice.
You got to be smart for this one.
Go engineers.
But something that I do a lot, and I give this, you know, I credit Oreo, formerly known as Oreo Boy, for this, which is not so much a technique as just like a mental prep. Again, is dream incubation. And, you know, just kind of just deciding what you want to dream about and, you know, thinking about it before you go to bed. It kind of mm-hmm. Sort of kind of fall under a mild, you know, you're just,
yeah,
it falls in with, you know, what you're trying to prepare yourself for. And, you know, I would try all these things, and, you know, if the first thing didn't work, then maybe the next thing would. And if, mm-hmm. you know, if I've aimed for a wild and it didn't happen, I might wake up and go back to sleep. And then have a dream for like about 30 seconds and go, hey, I was just trying to lucid dream a few seconds ago, and have like a dialed, or I guess it's like a,
yes.
That could be a dialed or a delayed onset de-aisled. I don't know.
Yeah.
What you'd want to call it. But
it's
all these attempts, and I like to look at successes in life, not as like it's either 100% or nothing. I like to look at it like, well, I'm going to try something 10 times and I don't give a crap about the first 9 times it didn't work, because I'll get to number 10. And that can all happen in one night. So does that count? You know, is that 100%? If you tried several times in one night to have a lucid dream and you finally did,
yeah,
after, you know, 4 failed techniques. But anyway.
Yeah, that's what you do. You flow with the situation. And if at the end you're lucid, you have definitely won.
Yay.
You know, that's all there is to it, in my opinion. Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah. Thank you again, Burke. That was wonderful. It put so much into perspective for me. I mean, you just outlined everything that, you know, we've all been talking about for years on this forum about induction techniques, and then just said the most obvious things. Duh, you just try them all in one night. You know, you don't have to, you know, a super beginner, Yeah, you might want to focus on one thing until you kind of get your feel for what lucidity is, but there is no rule anywhere that says you can't just be like, well, that one didn't work, scratch that off the list, you know, and you know, on to the next. You just put a lot of focus on wake back to bed, and I do too. A lot of lucid dreams really... waking up after being asleep for a while and then trying to get, you know, go back to sleep just seems to really prep your mind for lucidity. Because it's that sweet spot in between sleepiness and dreaminess and awareness. Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly. Which, you know, of course, there's no reason not to, you know, try everything you can, you know, as you're falling asleep at the beginning of the night. But then, you know, you do the wake back to bed, you know, you try the wild, if you flow into a dialed, it's all, and a de-dialed if you wake up. Yeah, having all that stuff there together, it's a great way to just flow with the situation. It's like a full, like a playbook, basically, versus just, okay, I've got my one thing, you know, and I'm relying on that. Yeah, it's great. That sounds like a great post. Cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely check it out. We'll post a link to it, but please read that. Even if you just think you know everything about lucid dreaming, it just kind of sums things up in a way. It makes you go, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, he's a really great writer, too. I was really, really happy to read that.
Nice, nice.
All right, this third question is from Nazrax, and it's called Jump Cuts and Dream Signs. My dreams are full of jump cuts. I'll be in one place, then I'll be in another. I know this is very common, but it seems to throw a wrench in the normal advice of making a reality check and dream sign habits. Normal advice says to do things like remember to reality check when you walk through a door. But in all the time I've been journaling, I don't think I've ever walked through a door. You know, me neither, incidentally. Huh. I can't recall a single time. Or, you know, before and directly after. But anyway, all right, I have a jump cut to already being through it, and as far as my dreaming self knows, I walked through a door a while ago, so it doesn't bear thinking about. Many of my dream sighs are location-based. You know, huge rooms and camping are both common. But since the dream always cuts into the middle of the scene, my dream self, you know, believes I've already been camping or in the huge room for a long time. Putting it another way, I've never consciously transitioned into a new place in a way that would trigger, I wasn't in a huge room before, but I am now, so I should reality check. I already do mantras, auto-suggestions, etc., but I haven't had any luck recognizing my common dream signs. Do you have any other advice? And this one, dream cuts, they happen all the time, and that is one of the reasons why it is so hard to remember to reality check, you know, in a dream. You know, one of the biggest things you can do, of course, besides just increasing reality checks during your waking life, is a specific kind of reality check that I like to do, which is ask yourself, where were you just now, and where are you headed? And it's so weird, too, Candace, that you sent this, like, these questions the other day, and, like, I swear to God, the day before I was in the car, and I just suddenly forgot where we just left from. I was like, did I just leave from, I was really tired. It was a tough work week for me and my boyfriend. He's like, he's on night shifts and I'm on day shifts. And we're like, where are we going? And I just was like, wait, where? And then I thought about it. I was like, hey, you know, that I've heard of this reality check a lot, but you know, you really, really, really should try it. Cause I mean, right now I could say, okay, 30 seconds ago, I was still recording this podcast and
yeah.
In the next 30 seconds, I'm probably still going to be, probably the next 30 minutes, knowing us. But, like, really seriously think about it. And then after you do that, think, does the answer to that question make sense? You know, what if your answer was, I was just riding that green dragon? Then be like, wait, no, does that make sense? Okay, and I have a perfect example of this to a coworker of mine named Nicole, and she also lucid dreams. I'm definitely sending her this link to this podcast. But I call this Attention Deficit Disorder Dreamers, also known as Nicole and the Chocolate. And this is a true, true, true story. When we were at work one day, and she is a little ADHD, that's okay, we love her anyway. But here's a perfect example why it's not a bad idea to ask yourself these questions while you are in waking life. Because she was kind of spastically running around talking to people about something. And she came back to the bakery and she had a piece of chocolate in her hand. And she looked at me with this just look of utter confusion in her face. And I was just like, what is wrong with you? And she said, she's like, I want to eat this piece of chocolate, but I can't remember if I actually dropped it on the floor and picked it up, or if I've been holding it this whole time. She said this. And of course, the answer is better safe than sorry. You know, chuck the chocolate. But
oh, yeah. Well, see, I was going to give the total opposite answer. If A, no one saw you, you know, and it fell on the floor, it's like it never happened, right? I mean, if there's no hairs, right? You look for hairs. If no one saw it, you pop it in your mouth. You just enjoy.
I'm not even sure she could recall that much. It's like she was so ADD all over the place. And so that funny. Moment, she couldn't remember if she imagined that she dropped it and picked it up or if it, you know, had actually happened. And so we sat there, you know, discussing this chocolate for a while. You know, was it worth it to go, you know, to go ahead and eat it or not? And she did not eat it.
Did not eat it
because she couldn't even verify the 3-second rule on it. But she really could not recall that. And I thought, wow, that is why you really, really, really need to focus in real life. Because I feel, and I don't know about all lucid dreamers, but I know for me, when I am, even when I'm lucid, probably more so when I am lucid, I feel a little ADHD.
Like
a little spastic. Like, yes. I'm lucid, great. I'm focusing on a task, everything's going great. Then suddenly, squirrel! Yeah. And I'm gone. Yeah. I lose lucidity, or I forget what was going on. And Nicole was a little bit like that in real life. And I think if we focus more during waking life, asking ourselves, where was I? What was I just doing? You know, what was I just holding? Mm-hmm. Did I actually pick this up off the floor? You know, where am I going? Just kind of like little mini timelines throughout the day.
Right.
Okay,
right.
You could kind of incorporate that into your SAT, sporadic awareness technique. Where was I? You know, who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? And then, you know, don't just stop there, because a reality check can't just be that little robotic, you know, how many fingers do I have? 8. Okay, I'm cool. Bye. You need to then after you answer the question, go back and go, did that make any sense? Mm-hmm. You know, and it can be a little tricky. Be like, okay, you know, ask yourself, where am I? I'm at work. What day is it? Tuesday. What time is it? 8:00. Wait, I don't work ever on Tuesdays at 8:00. You know, mm-hmm. Really, really, really ask yourself that question. And that I feel like that might help with a lot of transitions. The walking through the door thing was funny when you said that, because I have a lot of dreams that start out, you know, that are wild, that start out in my bed. And I get up out of, I literally get up out of the, instead of just like phasing through the wall or imagining a new dream scene, I literally, you know, get up out of the bed in the lucid dream, mm-hmm. and walk out the door. But I don't always have a real clear memory of doing that. So I'm glad you posted this question, Nazarax, because next time I do, I'm going to really focus on that, you know, doorway transition point, because I think that's very interesting. Because
I hadn't even thought of it. I mean,
it's a new scene.
I can't think of a non-lucid where I walk through a door. I feel like I have walked through doors in a lucid, but it's tricky, because it's like, did I just assume that it happened? Do I actually remember doing it? I mean, that could be an interesting thing to try. You know, like in one of these where I just basically slow down and like,
yeah,
walk through a door and just see what happens. You know, in fact, I do recall one time, this is early on, and I think you talked with me about this, but this is when I was a student in the intro class. I walked through a door out of a bank, and then the dream ended, and I was like, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do? I've got this problem now, or, you know, right now I'm afraid of doors, and, you know, I mean, it's silly, you know, because, but when you're first starting out, you think there's maybe these rules that you can't break. Of course, you realize after you do it for a while that the rules are just all invented by you, you know, and you can change them all, you know, but I was like, oh gosh, is it okay to do that? And, you know, I mean, there's, you know, all the rules that people, I won't even repeat them, but you know, all the rules you've read somewhere on some forum telling you, oh, don't ever do this, or this never works, or et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're all false, you know, I mean, because anything can work. I mean, but yeah, that's funny. I'll have to mess with the door thing some more. I know I've gone through doors, but it's like, do I just kind of, you know, pop through them? Or what? Because a lot of times in dreams, you're just kind of popping around. You don't know, you know, you just, but you're moving, and it's, I'll pay more attention to that. That's cool.
Yeah. I know that when I've phased through things, I remember details. Like I've gone through walls where I still remember seeing, like, you know, I went, I phased through sheetrock, and then I saw where I what they call wooden lats. Is that what those things are?
The just like the studs in the
house.
The
wooden 2x4s or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Passed through that, saw a little bit of insulation.
Oh, and nice! Went, wow, that's cool.
I don't go through walls that much. Mirrors seem to be my something I like doing more. I don't know why.
Because
if you go through a mirror, for some reason, it seems like I could go anywhere through that.
Yeah. But you always end up somewhere cool when you do your mirror thing. That's great.
Sometimes I just sort of roll out in another like dumb, boring room. But but it seems like when I go through walls, it's like, okay, I'm inside, and then I went through the wall, and I'm outside. Okay. Well.
Yeah. But
hoping for a scene change.
Yeah, you've done some really, really cool mirror transitions for sure. I am going to have to pay more attention on a lot of these transition type things, you know, because one thing I have done, I know I've walked through doors trying to make them lead to some other place, you know, so I know I've done it because like that was a teleportation thing I kind of tried for a while. I was like, oh yeah, now this door, man, totally going to lead to the Colosseum, even though it's like off of my master bedroom or whatever, you know, never seemed to really quite work out that way, but,
Open the door or did you phase through the door?
It was already open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it was already open. So that's kind of lame.
It could be like a totally different thing, you know. You know, the door's already open versus opening the door versus just phasing through it, you know.
Yeah.
What results you get from that.
Right, sure.
Those are my ideas on that. I didn't know if you had anything for...
Cool. Yeah, you really covered it pretty well. I mean, honestly, I think... I agree. Mostly what I'm going to say is how much I agree with what you're saying, that the jump... I know, Nazrax, you're looking... And by the way, thank you for providing a pronunciation guide for your name. You have no idea how much that helps me in particular.
Oh, I guessed. I was right.
He says the A's in Nazrax are like the A's in Apple. So we can be confident we're getting it right, you know.
Yay.
And they're not Nazrakes or whatever. And, you know, but yes, like you, I know you're looking for dream signs and thinking, hey, man, you know, I'm missing these dream signs. Like, you know, the dream sign of walking through a door is not even happening. But I'll tell you what, the jump cuts themselves are the best dream sign around. They are, you know, and then it's all down to recognizing them. And I agree that the how'd I get here, does this make sense reality check, is very powerful. It's got some serious advantages. Like it's purely mental, right? And you can perform it in front of everybody, mm-hmm, and not look crazy. You know, I mean, you sit there like studiously trying to like blow through your nose when it's pinched shut or whatever, and your eyeballs kind of pop out of your head. It's a little strange, you know. But with this one, you're just doing a mental exercise.
Unless you have chocolate in your hand, and then you will look crazy. So
right, yeah, do it. Yeah, do it mentally, and just eat the chocolate. Just do it. You know, life's too short. But I actually find this one to be more reliable than even the nose pinch. It's one of the harder ones to sort of remember to do, but I think once it becomes a habit, I think it's super effective. I've never tried this one and had it fail on me in a dream ever, you know, and even nose pinch on very, very rare occasions has not worked. You know, it's rare, but it has happened. And this one's really, really good. And I think like you said, is to just be really specific with it and just demand proof. What you're doing is even, you know, of course, in a dream, you're not going to be able to prove anything to anybody because your critical thinking capacities are kind of offline. That's why you're having to dial, you know, but you're bringing them online, you know. It's sort of like, you know, how you mentioned in the description of the, you know, in the question text that you said that doesn't bear thinking about. And I know exactly that attitude, you know, in a dream, that's how the dream sort of sells the illusion, is it convinces you that all these things aren't worth thinking about. And then getting past that assumption, like challenging that assumption that it is worth thinking about, even if you're kind of fumbling your way through the actual explanation, it doesn't really matter. What you're doing is you're activating your critical thinking and your skepticism. And once you bring that online, those are completely missing in a dream. And like once you start firing those up, you are on your way, and you're gonna be lucid. You bring that stuff online, and the rest of it just falls into place. And that's what you need to pierce the illusion. I think that's it. I honestly have nothing to add to that. I really think, you know, folding that is that the same as the, I'm not good with the terminology, but is that what Sages is calling the reverse reality check? The one where you're basically scrutinizing your situation, scrutinizing yourself, maintaining that self-awareness. Is that right?
I think so. I remember, I haven't read that in a while.
Yeah. Anyway, it's good, whatever it is. The how'd I get here? You know, does this make sense? All that stuff.
I think the reverse. I think that is what that is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. And since you're having those jump cuts, anytime you do this after a jump cut, you are going to know because it's going to be obvious. You won't be able to rebuild that history of how you got there, and something about the plot will make no sense whatsoever. And just the fact that you are scrutinizing anything and building that habit of scrutinizing stuff and sort of making your story fall into place and be organized, that's what you need. It's perfect. Perfect.
That's right. Build those myelin sheaths to get used to scrutinizing where you've been and where you're
there
going.
There you go. There you go. Nice. Nice. Myelin sheath. Perfect. Cool. That was it that I had for my side. We can just kind of sum it up, I guess. But I mean, have I not summed it up enough? Man, I'm all over this. How'd I get here? Does this make sense? Yeah. Reality check thing. Do that. It's good. And I think it's perfect for a situation like this. And so I think that's pretty much everything that we had for tonight. Thank you everyone for the questions and for being patient while I delayed us on getting this next podcast out. But life's been crazy, and yeah, just thanks for being patient. And it's great to be doing another one of these. And thank you very much for listening.
Well, you know, it's not just you. I admit that. You know, in our past podcasts, I have been, you know, a little bit intimidated by the fact that your voice sounds so wonderful and smooth and velvety and professional, and mine just sounded kind of crass and loud and Texan. But
you have a new mic now.
I have a new mic now. I think I have the exact same one as you, right?
You have this exact same mic as I do. Yeah.
Blue.
Yeah, can we do the plug, the blue snowball?
Blue. Yeah. I wish we were getting money for it, but anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's really great. It's going to make editing this so much easier, I think, for you.
Great.
But before we go, I did have a little bit of interesting news. I wanted to mention that a writer named Dorian Ralston, he's a freelance writer who covers cognitive science and mental health. And his writing has appeared in New Yorker, in the Atlantic, Paris Overview, Scientific American Mind, and a bunch of other stuff. He actually contacted Alex, the owner for Dreamviews, wanting to, you know, talk with somebody about lucid dreaming for an article that he's writing. So it's an article that he's writing for, or that he wrote, he finished it, it's called The Dreamcatcher, and it's an online magazine called medium.com/matter. And so I talked with him on the phone for about an hour, just about lucid dreaming in general.
Awesome.
And how lucid dreaming and forums work and all that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, I can't really make a plug for DV on here because we were not mentioned in the article.
Gotcha.
But what he wrote, The Dreamcatcher, is actually referring to Stephen LaBerge.
Oh,
and,
sure. Okay.
Yeah, the title goes, The Dreamcatcher, Why Does the Researcher Who Pioneered the Study of Lucid Dreaming Face a Future in Academic Exile? Which sounds a little melancholy, but...
That is rough. Yeah.
I do recommend reading the article, because he did attend one of his... one of LaBerge's little workshops I think it was Hawaii.
Hawaii thing. Sure,
it's written from the perspective of someone attending this, and you know, asking him questions. Why, where do you see your lucid dreaming research going? Because he has a lot of stuff on the Nova Dreamer and just lucid dreaming in general that he's not having a lot of. Luck with financing, I guess, and on getting it published, getting it out there. I recommend reading this article, not from a standpoint of you know sadness, but just knowing that he is there, he's writing this stuff, he's researching this, lucid dreaming, and just trying to get the subject of lucid dreaming out there. That's seems like his life dedication.
Yeah,
and we'll definitely provide the link for that. But I definitely wanted check out the article, not just for the subject of Stephen LaBerge, but Dorian Ralston is just a wonderful writer, and hopefully maybe one day he'll want to do another article that will get a nice little plug for Dreamview. So go look at it, like it or whatever, recommend it, suggest it.
I'd love to check that out.
Yeah,
sounds great.
It's a great read.
Cool.
Anyway, that's all I have.
Well, great, excellent. Well. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'll let you do the last line. That's your thing.
Oh, a sweet LDs, y'all.
Very nice.